Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 125, entitled How to Build a Billion-Dollar Business Like Quest Nutrition, I chat with the co-founder of Quest Nutrition and the CEO of Impact Theory, Tom Bilyeu. In today's episode, Tom talks about how he was able to get Quest Nutrition to become one of the fastest-growing companies in America and the strategies he used just a few years back to get this business into having a over $1 billion valuation. He shares with us exactly what worked for him and his company, what's working now, what you can do if you're starting your own business today, and how to ultimately build a very successful business. If you're wondering how you can build a billion-dollar business and how Quest was able to do it, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. And guys, just a couple quick announcements and updates I wanted to share with you. Last week, we had some problems with the elitemanmagazine.com website. We were going through an upgrade to a larger hosting account, so the site was periodically down, but it is all set, 100% fixed now, so no worries there. You can check out all the show notes and everything else at elitemanmagazine.com. Also, a number of you emailed me along those lines about having problems subscribing to the podcast because of the migration. So the feed that was going into iTunes and a few of the other hosting platforms, Google Play and I believe maybe Stitcher, were down for a few hours as well. And a couple of you had some issues with subscribing to the show. So that's all set as well. It should be fixed. If you do have any issues at all with subscribing to the Elite Man podcast, just email me at justin@elitemanmagazine.com if you could, and just share with me the information so I can know and make any updates or fixes to it. But at this point, I don't think there's going to be any more issues with subscribing to the podcast, as that has been resolved with the hosting migration to the larger account, and the feed and everything is all fixed and set. So elitemanmagazine.com is ready to go. You can subscribe to the podcast if you haven't yet and enjoy all these fantastic interviews and podcast episodes. And the final thing I wanted to mention is Elite Life Nutrition is just a few more weeks away from being launched. Really super excited about this. Can't wait to share with you all our fantastic products, and am really excited to just, you know, reveal all the excellent supplements. So I wanted to give you an update on that as well. Elite Life Nutrition is just a few more weeks away, but we'll keep you updated with any more info. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from elitemanmagazine.com, and my guest today is Tom Bilyeu from Quest Nutrition and Impact Theory. Tom, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Dude, thanks for having me on.
Cool. So let's dive right into things, man. I got a lot of, you know, questions I want to pick your brain on. And first things first, like, how did you start the whole Quest Nutrition brand? I know you had another company that was like super successful, you know, profit-wise, money-wise, but you weren't happy with that. So how did you make the transition into going from your prior company into the Quest Nutrition brand, and, you know, make that leap to doing something you actually love, but was also like very successful monetarily and profit-wise?
Well, you really touched on exactly why we moved. So we had built a technology company, and originally when I came into that company, I was hired as a copywriter. And my partners, the guys that became my partners anyway, said, look, don't think of yourself as a copywriter. That's just your tuition. You know, you can come in here, you can do anything you set your mind to, you can have any role in the company, but you have to become the right person for that job. And so I took them really seriously and worked my way up and became a partner in the company and actually had equity. And at the end of the day, though, we were chasing money. We were trying to build the company to sell it. And that just, in terms of the product, it wasn't something that I really cared about. It was security software. We didn't use it in our own company, even though we were sort of like the perfect candidate. It wasn't like, we're not like hyper security focused guys. Like, that wasn't our thing. And so, you know, originally when I had come on board, I thought it was going to be 18 months. So that's what we were talking about. We're going to build this company up. We're going to sell it in 18 months. And so it seemed like, okay, like I can head down, you know, and just chase money and do that. And honestly, in the beginning, like the idea of getting rich was so intoxicating. And from the time that I was a kid, I was like, I knew two things. One day I would have six pack abs and I would be rich. And so like I was really excited to be chasing the money and thought amazing and, you know, thought it was going to be great. But then 18 months turns into ultimately 8.5 years before we sold the company, and sustaining that level of intensity for nearly a decade when you don't care about any of it. Like, the product wasn't something that I was passionate about. I realized, you know, not too long into it, that money just in and of itself isn't very interesting. You need to know why you want the money. Money's an amazing facilitator, and don't get me wrong, it is incredibly powerful, but it's not powerful in the ways that people think it's going to be powerful. So it doesn't change the way that you feel about yourself. It doesn't give you any sense of fulfillment, like all the things that really drive people. Money can't touch that. So that's going to come from other things. And so I just got to the point where I realized, all right, like I can't chase money anymore. I don't feel alive. Like, I'm not tapping into my passions. Like, this is soul crushing. So I went to the guys. It was about at the 6-year mark. And I said, look, I quit. I can't do this anymore. I want to do something that makes me feel alive. I want to be passionate again. And if that means that I make less money, I honestly don't care. Like, that sense of like really being ignited with passion and a sense of fulfillment, like the game that you're playing isn't money. It's neurochemistry, right? So once I understood the game I'm playing is actually brain chemistry. I want to feel good about myself. I want to love what I'm doing every day. I want to feel alive. Like, those are the things that are really meaningful, honestly.
Yeah.
And so I told him, I can't do this anymore, I quit and all that. And I had gotten pretty much back to my house. I was literally driveway, and they called me and said, look, come out to dinner with us. I went out to dinner, and they said the words that really reframed things for me. And they said, we could do this without you, but we don't want to. And that let me reconnect to the brotherhood and remembering how much I'd come to just love these guys, and that I wanted to do something great with them, but I felt like we had to reframe what we were doing. And I said, look, guys, I can't chase money anymore. This has got to be about something more than money. And I want to add value. I want to like tap into my passion. And, you know, so over the following months, like, we really talked about what that would look like. And basically it was, you know, let's do something that's predicated on delivering value, something that we would love doing, even if we were failing. And that thing ultimately, for three very different reasons, ended up being nutrition. And so for me, I grew up in a morbidly obese family, so I could show up every day and fight thinking about my mom and my sister, who were just struggling insanely profoundly with their weight. And knowing that, like, I could really help them if we were able to make food that they could choose based on taste, and it happened to be good for them. So in being able to tap into that, then it was like, this was about real fulfillment. This was about passion. This was about feeling alive. And then also, we were going to build this business in a fundamentally different way. We're going to be doing it through content creation, building a community, leveraging social media, which back in 2009, when we first started thinking about the company, like, nobody had the vision that we had for social media and how it could be leveraged. And so that really ended up being one of the reasons that our growth was so explosive.
Yeah, man, I think you really tapped into it, you know, early on with social media. In 2009, it was kind of just like in its infancy, kind of with Facebook and some of the other ones, really right before they took off. And I mean, you obviously just kind of leveraged that to make that huge jump, and I think help the explosion of Quest, right?
No question. Yeah, and really looking at the tools and watching cultural movements, those things are really, really important if you want to be a successful marketer.
What were some of the other things you did early on with Quest to really make it kind of take that leap and be a successful company? Is there any other like strategies you used?
No question. So building a product that is absolutely best in class, like, that is so critical, and you really can't overcome not having a best-in-class product with great marketing, and not especially not in today's hyper-connected social era. Like, you need to make something that actually improves people's lives. And when you do that, and then they have this platform to tell other people, essentially what they're telling other people is, this product made my life better. And when that's what people are saying, like, that's when you get crazy growth. And so coming into impact theory, that was literally exactly the same strategy that we wanted to use was, okay, if we're going to be a media company, if our product is content, like, how do we make that content so good that people are still saying the same thing? This content changed my life and it changed it for the better. And so we're seeing the same kind of explosive growth that we saw at Quest, which is, I mean, just, it's mind-boggling, but it really comes down to, you've got to have a product that actually positively impacts people's lives. And so focusing on that, like, rather than really focusing on being a slick marketer, like, get your product down first. Really make sure, and, you know, at Quest, like, we were obsessed with this concept of, it has to be metabolically advantageous. So, like, literally, it's not enough to get people excited to eat it. People are excited to eat a Snickers bar, but it's not metabolically advantageous. And so, you know, we just crossed the line and said, we're not willing to make things that we feel compromise nutritionally. You know, if we're going to end metabolic disease, like, we weren't saying we're going to build a $1 billion brand. Okay. We were saying we're going to end metabolic disease. So that was the driving force. And we thought, if we could build a big business doing it, like, that's amazing. That'd be incredibly powerful. And that will certainly, like, accelerate how rapidly we're able to do this. But at the end of the day, this is ending metabolic disease. And let's just make sure everybody's focused on that. Let's make sure that it's baked into the core of, you know, who the company is. And so that drove everything. Like, our R&D, all of our development was predicated around, when you eat this, can you actually test in the blood for the metabolic advantages? And so that's really where we made a name for ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, obviously product is above all else is the most important thing, and I think you guys really focused on that early on, which is definitely huge. Did you guys have to give away a lot of product initially?
Yeah, and that's an amazing position to be in. You want to be in a position where you can give the product away, and that helps you grow your business. And, you know, so again, with impact theory, it's like taking all the lessons that I learned at Quest. All of our content is free, and you've got guys charging, you know, like, crazy amounts of money, and they've got, you know, just all this paywall content that they're delivering. And we just crossed a line early in the beginning, and we said, we're going to give this all away. And really what we're trying to do is build a community, because to launch, so our goal at Impact Theory is to build a studio bigger than Disney, using some of the similar principles of having everything feed into a singular brand ethos, which is what Disney did very well. So we're not child focused like they were, but believe that we're living through this age of the age of the entrepreneur, essentially. But if you take a broader view of what it means to be an entrepreneur, and I mean, look, I'm talking to a guy that's got a podcast doing exactly this, so you totally get it. But building something where you can, every piece of content feeds into the notion that you can improve yourself, that you can do more, that you can be more, that you can expand your own capabilities. You know, if you can have a brand that stands for that and is creating very entertaining content, but all of that content ultimately is designed to push towards that. And we're doing both social content and we're doing traditional narrative content. So we're doing social now to build the community. And then once we have the community, we'll leverage that to have a distribution platform for the traditional narrative. So we're already, like, getting involved in traditional narrative, but we'll really press down on that, say, a year and a half from now. When we've got a bigger community that we can use to help distribute the content. So that's the play, and recognizing that we're in a position where we've got this high quality content that we can give away, or in the case of Quest, we have these bars that I know the lifetime value of the customer. I give them the first one, but it's, you know, essentially the drug dealer model. It's like, you get the first one, you see, like, whoa, this thing is delicious. I love this. I want this in my life. And so they come back and they pay for it. And that's the beauty of being in a business where the product is consumable.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Especially early on, I think it's so important when you have that great product for people to be able to try it out, to test it, and actually see how great of a product it is. And I think so many people kind of are scared to do that initially when they come out with a new brand, is like, you know, lose money initially, you know, out of the gate by giving stuff away or by you know, advertising it a lot and kind of like taking that hit in the beginning, but it's so important, like you said, later on for the lifetime of the customer, like the money you're going to get back in return.
Definitely. Look, there are some business models that doesn't work, and you've got to be honest with yourself about what business model you have. But if you have a business model that can support that, it's magical.
What types of business models wouldn't that work in?
If you're selling servers, good luck, you know, giving something away that people buy once and don't need again. TVs, like things that are non-consumable, like tangible goods. Yeah, like that's really tough, especially if the item doesn't advertise itself. So if you're doing like an apparel brand, like that can be really advantageous, even though it's not a high consumable thing. If it has branding on it, then that becomes just amazing. Also, you can fashion to something that you can get into the hands of influencers. And as long as they're going to be in a position where they're asked about it, like that's one of the reasons that a lot of magazines will say, like they'll take a picture of, you know, the Kardashians, just to pick an obvious example, and it'll actually tell you what they're wearing, because the brands have structured deals with the influencer and the magazines to make sure that that gets mentioned. So you'll see mentions of stuff like that, even when it's like, why are you telling me what they're wearing? But it's like, that's how they get these deals, right? Is because the people making the clothes know that even though it doesn't say my name brand in big letters across it, that that's going to be part of the article is they will mention what they're wearing.
What types of social media strategies did you use early on? Like, you know, I'm thinking something like you mentioned earlier, like the impact theory. You have like a lot of content, a lot of information. You're interviewing people, just giving great content like that way. But when you have an actual brand, a product, what types of like social media things are good for kind of that stuff and having that take off?
There's really two things you want to do. One is you want to reach out to the social influencers that are big in your arena, and not even necessarily huge, right? Because in the beginning, if you don't have a big name, you're going to have to go out to people that are more on your level, that are really excited and eager to have somebody essentially sponsor them. And that's usually how people will present it to their followers. Like, even if I was just giving somebody two boxes of bars a month, they would say, you know, Quest is sponsoring me. I love that because, you know, we definitely have an affiliation. We definitely believe in what they're doing and like being represented with them. And then it gives them some credibility and legitimacy to say that they do have an official relationship with us. So that's really critical. And then as you get bigger, you can go to bigger and bigger influencers. And that's just a great way because they've spent the time building up the credibility with their followers. So if they're using your product in a really authentic way and they're and that was really important to us. Like, if you were a user of Quest or you are representing Impact Theory and telling people, you know, that they should be watching our content, it's like you need to actually believe in that content. Like, this can't be something that it's like it's just pay for play. Like, and the reason is it won't be as effective, right? So it's not like I have some moral stance against it. It's just not as effective. So when you get people who really like believe in what you're doing and they're out there promoting it, not just because you have a relationship, but because it's like, I actually use this and this has really brought value to my life. And so they can talk in a really authentic way to their followers about that they've, you know, been very careful to build a real relationship with. So the people that they influence are like, wow, like I've got to go try this thing. Like, they're really talking about it. Really seems like it's an actual real part of their life. So now they get into it and experience that for themselves, as well as just being a part of this community. You know, whoever that influencer is, they're part of that community that's now reinforcing that. So one of the first influencers that we worked with at Quest was a woman named Cassie Ho, just an amazing human being, and her followers really, really look up to her. So when she was doing a cooking show that we did called Cooking Clean with Quest, you know, they really, really trusted her to only align herself with brands that she could actually believe in. And so things like that are big wins. So doing that is huge. And then also building your own community and making sure that you're delivering value to the people that are following you. So, you know, putting out content that somehow, some way delivers value. So since Impact Theory is all about transformation and helping people get out of the matrix and improve their mindset, like, we're putting out content that actually helps them do that. So if you consume this content and you really take it seriously and you act on it, like, it's actually going to make your life better. And so the comments that we get are crazy because people are just like, this has really changed my life. And I've either improved in my business because of your content. I've started my own company because of your content. I'm a better parent because of your content. Like, whatever their thing is that they're trying to get great at. Like, so you see this community building up like that. They're helping each other. So, and they're sharing the content because they really believe in it. And then that helps us grow that way.
Cool. So there, from what I'm hearing, there really isn't a difference from the impact theory approach to the Quest Nutrition approach. They're both delivering value and helping people out and building up that community.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, so there's really only two, in fact, that even that's variations on a theme. There's one way to build a social following, add value to people's lives. Now, you may add it by being an amazing singer, and so people just love your music. You may add it by being funny and you're just entertaining. You may add it by empowering people and you're giving useful takeaway advice. So you could build a following, you know, like if you're a finance guy, you could build a following by teaching people about finance. By showing them investments that you're making, whatever. Like, it doesn't really matter what your thing is. You just have to make sure that you're creating content that adds value to somebody's life, that they would say, whoa, like, I've either really enjoyed this, I've been entertained by it, I've been educated by it, I've been inspired by it, motivated by it, like, whatever the case may be, but they're getting value.
Hey, gentlemen, have you joined the best Facebook group on the planet yet? Man, I talk about this group all the time, but for good reason. The Elite Man Mastermind group on Facebook is the hands-down one collection of like-minded men you have to be a part of. I'm talking about world-class performers here. Authors, podcasters, life coaches, dating coaches, relationship experts, health and fitness experts, nutritionists, doctors. There's so many awesome professionals in this group willing to lend you a hand. And give you advice, give you their best tips and strategies and techniques for mastering life and becoming the best man you can be. And there's thousands of incredible, regular, awesome dudes like yourself in this group as well, who share advice, who share information, who inspire each other and take each other to the next level of becoming the best version of themselves. So join the group right now if you haven't already. I feel like I talk about this all the time, but I love this group. It's so inspiring. It's incredible. You have to be a part of it if you're not a part of it yet. Just ask any one of the thousands of guys who are in this group. We absolutely love it. We talk about it every day. We're involved every day. It's incredible, and I want you to be a part of it too. So go to EliteManMastermind.com. It's going to forward you right to Facebook, or just go to Facebook and type in Elite Man Mastermind. You can join the group that way as well. Either way, I'll see you on the inside, guys. So keep kicking ass and taking names. What's your favorite social media platform right now, and what do you think is going to be big in the next few years?
So I think we really do well with YouTube. And so that's the one, because it's visual, that's the one that I feel gives us the most diversity. It can handle long form content, can handle short form content. So I'm most bullish on that. And I think that the second one is going to be Facebook, again, because it's visual. Now, it's very different from YouTube in terms of what clicks and pops. But like, when we go viral on Facebook, and that's where we get like just the content that I've done has been viewed over 170 million times at this point. Wow. So, and most of that virality has happened on on Facebook, but we do shorter clips there. So like, those clips are going to be anywhere from like 2 minutes to say 10 minutes. But on YouTube, some of our content is, you know, an hour or even a little bit over an hour. So that really gives us a chance to like flex our muscle, like really do something exceptional. So, and also like, if you're like, depending on what your content type is, like, we have such an encouraging and excited community on YouTube. Like, the comments on our YouTube is just awesome. So I love it for that reason. And then I personally enjoy doing Instagram. So Instagram is so fast. It's so light. It's like that quick. Like, so I probably have the most back and forth with the community on Instagram, which normally people would say that that's really Twitter. But I don't know. There's something about just the way that my following has happened on Instagram. There's just a ton of back and forth, and I really, really enjoy that, and the stories and all that. So, you know, Instagram can do live, it can do video responses, it can do text responses, it can do comments on your post. So it really, you know, there's a bit of personal things there. I think YouTube will be our biggest home because we really want to be a media company. I think Facebook is going to be number two because I just think they're going to be the beast. And so from a just raw views perspective, I think that's going to be the monster, and we're certainly growing the fastest on Facebook. So that's sort of my rough breakdown.
Yeah, I think video too. I keep hearing different estimates of what they think is going to be the main form of consuming content, but it's like everyone's saying video is going to be like 90% in the next couple of years. I mean, do you agree with that?
Or more, man. I mean, yeah. Just the reality is, like, think about what's been the dominant media platform for like the last, I don't know, almost 70 years, I think. It's TV. Mm. So, you know, people at the end of the day, they want to be lazy. And they want to be passive in their consumption. And so just recognizing that people want the content when they want it on their time frame. So it's certainly not going to be going to the movies. It's going to be something that they can do in their house. It's going to be something that they can do passively. I really believe that one of the reasons that video is going to eat the world is if somebody really gets the algorithm right to let one thing string into the next, string into the next, string into the next, that's where it gets really powerful. I think right now Netflix is doing the best job at that, but I don't think they're perfect. I think YouTube's putting a lot of time and attention to make that happen. I think Facebook actually lags the farthest behind in terms of real passive consumption. And they're sort of the, like, when you're by yourself and you're just sort of scrolling and getting a, you know, like literally seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, like, getting a little bit of the content, a little flavor, a little taste. They're great at that. But if you're going to gather around with your friends, chances are, you know, it's going to be you and your bae, like, kicking back on some Netflix and chill, right? So, like, they've got that. But I'll be really curious to see, because Apple, Netflix, and, you know, Google via YouTube are locked in sort of a death battle for who can figure out that passive one thing leads into the next. And right now, my favorite is actually what Apple's done with their Apple, like the TV app within Apple TV. So that's one where it's like all the things that I've watched are sort of laid out right there so I can bounce between them. I think they're a little bit ahead of the curve, but I don't think anybody's nailed it yet. So I'd actually pitched, like, so random. I had pitched the guys that invested in Quest, I pitched them. I said, somebody's going to, this is like a year ago, maybe a little bit more. I was like, whoever figures this out is going to win. There's so much money to be made in the algorithm that makes it like watching TV, where you can essentially flip through channels. So, but of course, I mean, the right people are running with that. And that's the people that own the platforms.
Yeah. So what are you trying to get your partners to invest in one of these companies?
I like flirted with the notion of becoming the company that did the aggregation. Mm-hmm. I really think that it's the smart move is for them to do it themselves, and they're all now doing it. So I think it would have been a lot of wasted time and effort. So I'm actually glad that there was never any real momentum behind the idea. It's so obvious that that's going to be where somebody's going to win. Like, once you figure out how to make it like a TV experience where I can do it by myself or in a group, that is very easy to find the things that I want. Because, like, TV broke itself, you know, ultimately into channel, and you knew when certain programming was going to be on. And then as it got into on-demand and you could record everything, like, it was all there. But it was like Netflix is like this infinite thing. So you're now relying on their sort of recommendations. But one thing doesn't lead sort of seamlessly and easily into the next yet. And so they have to figure that out. But that was, you know, I mean, think about being a couch. Like, think about when you're sick and you're at home and you're just like, you know, you're 14 and you're flipping through the channels. It's like you can lose all day to it because it's so effortless.
Yeah.
So no. That's really where they have to get. Because, like, right now I feel that they just go too hard in recommending one thing over and over and over.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's certainly the future, and, you know, the more you study it, the more you look into it, you're like, you realize just how powerful video is and just how much more people are consuming it. Tom, can you talk about the partnership you have with the co-founders of Quest Nutrition? Like, what's that like, having someone else share the ownership of a company and not just being the, you know, sole guy in charge of everything? Is it kind of tough or was it tough at times, like, you know, having to split that up, or has it always been like easy for you to transition into that? Yeah,
I'm a huge believer in partnerships, and I think that it's so critical to build the team. But I also think so, and I had a 14-year run with those guys, and it was, I mean, just the 14 most magical and transformative years of my life. But it's certainly not an accident or a mistake that the next company I did, I co-founded with my wife with the very clear understanding that we're following my vision. So everybody that came on board, it was like, hey, look, I want you, I am a huge believer in teams and I really want everyone's opinion because, man, if we're relying on me to have every good idea, like we're really in trouble. But at the end of the day, there needs to be one decision maker. And so that was always a, it was part of what made Quest so great, and then also the thing that made it interesting for me to break off and found my own company. So it, I think you need a team. I think that's critical, but I also think the dynamic, if you're going to, like Lisa, my wife, and I have the perfect dynamic as a partnership to do this where I'm the alpha and she's the beta, and we're both very comfortable in those roles. That does not mean I'm dominant, she's submissive. She's just a wildly amazing person with very strong opinions and viewpoints, but very much wants me to be in a leadership position. So she wants her voice to be heard, but she believes that I'm the right person to lead and make the final decision. So that dynamic is just absolutely beautiful. And if you like find, I always encourage people, you need a visionary and you need an executor. And you both need to be world-class at those things, and you need to value the other person for what they do. So myself, as a visionary, I really value my wife's ability to execute, and I value like how good she is at that, and she is so much better at that than I am. So it's like she gets every opportunity to shine. She gets my admiration and my just like I'm so grateful for what she does, and so she feels amazing about her contributions, and likewise – like my wife isn't going to think of the grand vision. She doesn't like playing chess. She doesn't want to be thinking all those moves ahead. You know, she doesn't want to have to deal with all that. She wants to know, like, what are my marching orders? What am I supposed to do? So she wants me to live in the sort of vague realm of like, there are infinite possibilities before us. And I liken it to being in a room with 1,000 doors. Getting good at closing the 999 doors is what makes a visionary powerful. And it's not being able to open more doors. That's what most people do, and they get totally lost and they never go anywhere because they're so impressed with their ability to open another door and another door and another door. That doesn't help. Vision is shutting the doors and knowing which one of the 1,000 to walk through. So my wife doesn't want to do that. She wants to know, like, what door do we go through? You decide that, and then I will help actually execute and make that work. So finding a partnership like that is absolutely critical. But having multiple people trying to close the doors, and you can't agree on which ones to close or which one to walk through, that can be amazing, and you can create incredible friction between that. But then there also comes a time where it's like, okay, now it's not that one door is better than the other, it's that we have to choose, and whose vision is that going to be? And so being in a situation where I'm the sole vision, and you know, then the rest of the team is about executing on that, that is ultimately something that I think is more effective.
Tom, how do you pick your projects that you want to like go into and maybe invest in? Like, do you have a large, I'm assuming you have a, like a large portfolio of different companies and things you're investing in, but what do you look at before you dive into something or you choose that, you know, decide that you're going to work with something?
At the end of the, so the things that I give my time to, so time and money are different. So if I'm going to give my money to something, it just needs to be a product that I really believe in, I think delivers a lot of value, I can feel good about, that I'm going to openly talk about, that I think I can actually help build that. Because if I'm just going to be totally passive money, that's not very interesting to me. And then the other is, if I'm going to give my time to it, then it has to feed into my mission of pulling people out of the matrix. So that at the end of the day is what I am just, I think that I'm not a big believer in like meant to be, but I'll use the language because it's easy to understand. I think that's like what I am on this earth to do, is pull people out of the matrix. So anything that I'm going to give my time to, it's got to be that. But like I've invested in a jet company because what they do, this is so incredible. It's a company called JetSuiteX, and they offer flights out of private airports. So it is just like flying private. You show up 20 minutes before. You can have a car pick you up on the runway when you land, and it's just incredible, but it's the same price as a Southwest ticket because you're on a jet that seats 30 people. So you're not flying by yourself, which is kind of cool, but it means it's very expensive. So like even I like rarely fly private, not because I can't afford it, because it's like, oh my God, like the thought of spending that much money on a flight, it's just hard to make the economics work. And so I know the CEO of the company, and he was the same. He was like, he was running a private jet company, and he was just like, there's got to be a way to like lower the cost in this, not a little, but exponentially. And so when he found it and pitched it, I was like, dude, I have to be a part of that. Because going through a traditional airport is so painful that it's time, right? I want to be in the business when you're essentially selling people time, because it is the most precious thing you could ever pay for. So I'm sad I didn't know about Uber until it was big, because that is clearly one that's selling time, because I can work now while somebody else does the driving. So that's big for me as well.
Do you have any investing tips, like kind of in general? Like, do you recommend maybe real estate investing? I know Bitcoin is huge right now. Is there any kind of general tips you'd like to share with us?
There is only one. Get involved in things you're deeply passionate about. That's it, period. Because then if you lose your money, at least it was like, I believed in that. I was passionate about that. I thought I could help. I thought I could create energy, get other people excited about it, because I really believe in it. There is no guarantees, none, zero, zip, zilch. So get in, like, put your money into something so that you can have a voice into something you really care about. Or that, like, just from a play the stock market perspective, I've got money in Tesla, because I really believe in Tesla. I believe in what they're doing. I believe in Elon Musk. I think it's interesting. I'm excited just to be like, oh my God, I own shares in Tesla. Like, that kind of thing is also important. But so for me, like, if you're really an investor, meaning like you're putting a significant amount of capital into the company, not in just the public markets, but you're, you know, putting into potentially a private company, like, that is, make it a passion play. Make sure it's something you care about. Make sure it's something you want to see brought to the world. Do not do something because you think it's a guaranteed win. There are exactly zero guaranteed wins.
Can you talk about the role you mentioned it a couple minutes ago, the role that the movie The Matrix had in your life when you first saw it way back when?
Yeah, I mean, that movie really planted a seed in my mind, because I won't say it was like I watched it and binary, I walked out and my life was forever different. But I watched it and it began to give me the understand, like the metaphor with which to look at my life. And Joseph Campbell, who wrote The Power of Myth and is just an amazing, amazing thinker, said, if you want to change the world, change the metaphor. And so they really changed the metaphor for me of what it meant to be a human. Like, what is the human experience? And I realized that we all pull these, you know, lies over our own eyes that limit what we think we're capable of. And so the whole movie is about Morpheus teaching Neo that what you think is reality, A, isn't reality, and B, once you've woken up to what reality is, you still have all these lingering beliefs that hold you back. And so he's pushing him, trying to get him to see, like, you can do way more than you think you can. And of course, one of the most powerful lines in the movie, when Neo asks Morpheus, are you telling me I can dodge bullets? And he says, no, Neo, when you're ready, you won't have to, right? Like, understanding that all these things that you think you have to do, all these limits that you think are real and that are on you, they're actually not. And so the reason that he doesn't have to dodge bullets is because the bullets can't kill him, right? So that, like, really understanding that things like embarrassment aren't going to kill you, failure is not going to kill you, that these are all things you're going to learn from. There's no reason to be afraid of them or run from them or hide or let your whole life be dictated by them, which is what most people do. And so it really gave me this way of, like, thinking about my life and asking the question, like, what is my kung fu, right? So Neo has to learn kung fu in order to be able to fight. Like, what is my kung fu? Okay, it's business? Awesome. What's my version of jacking into the Matrix? Oh, it's reading? Awesome. So I could take something that took somebody decades, they put it into a book, I can now read that book in a week, so I can learn, you know, what took somebody maybe 10 years or more, I can learn it in a week. Like, the arbitrage on time on that is so crazy. So just, like, doing more and more reading and trying to get faster and faster at reading so I could assimilate that information more and more rapidly was my version of jacking into the Matrix. And now I knew what I should be learning about business, mindset, all of that, and it literally changed my life. And because of all that, I went from scrounging in my couch cushions to find enough change to put gas in my car to building a billion-dollar brand.
Yeah, it's incredible, man. Can you talk? I know I've heard this on, I think, a different interview. You listen, I believe, to audiobooks at 3x a time. Can you talk about being able to consume that much content?
Yeah, so look, at the beginning, it's going to be hard, and you put it at 1.5x, and you're going to be like, well, I can barely keep up. And then all of a sudden, you're going to be like, did I bump this back to one? This sounds completely normal. And you realize, no, I didn't. So you move it up to two, and then two, like, oh, God, you're kind of stressing. Like, oh, I can barely keep up. And then again, did I bump it back down? And so then you go to three, and then ultimately three feels like, is it possible that this is actually 1X? And it's only when, like, somebody will get in my car and hear, like, it comes on and they sound like chipmunks and they're like, what on earth is it that I remember that it's even sped up? So it really, it's like anything, man. You're not going to be able to do it at first. Not like I went from one to three. But you can push yourself, get better, get stronger, and get to the point where you actually can assimilate that information. And look, there's times, like, I'm reading a book now called The Human Superorganism, and I have to bump it down to 2.5 because it's like at three, literally, I'm like, the ideas are just, each idea is so new to me that I have no frame of reference for it, that I have to go stop, look things up. I really need to slow it down a little bit to really assimilate the information. And so just like, no, like, if you're not getting the information, back it off, right? The point isn't to get through the book as fast as you can. The point is to actually assimilate the information as fast as you can. But I just find that people don't make demands of themselves. They don't force themselves to go faster, to, you know, do more. So
what's your morning routine like? I know you're a big routine guy.
I am. So for me, the morning routine starts the night before. That's really, really critical. You need to get your sleep. So I want to be up. I want to get as much of, like, my really important work done in the morning before the first employee even shows up. So I go to bed at 9, like it's a religion. I am in bed, asleep at 9, and then I don't set an alarm ever. I mean, I'll set an emergency alarm just to make, like, if I have something at 9 o'clock and I'm like, just in case, like, who knows? I'll set an alarm to make sure that I have time to get up. But literally, it's got to be 99% of the time I wake up without an alarm. So I sleep between 5 and 6 hours. That's just my natural rhythm. So if I go to bed at 9, I'm waking up anywhere from like 2 to 4. So I'm usually in the gym by 4 a.m. And like yesterday, I was done in the gym, I think, just after 4 a.m. So get up whenever I wake up, go right to the gym. I hate the gym, but I think it's absolutely just critical to optimizing cognitively. There is a brain-body connection. If you're not working out your body, if you're not stressing it, if you're not, you know, going through that process, you're never going to be able to optimize cognitively. I wish it weren't so, but it is. So I hit the gym for that reason. Plus, the gym, you can really earn credibility with yourself. You're doing something that may not be innately pleasurable, but you told yourself you would show up. You did. You show up. Also, you push yourself. It hurts, but you push through the pain. Like, these are all just incredibly important reminders. And then most importantly, you're transforming your body and you literally become capable of something you weren't capable of before. It's just a very, very powerful reminder of how possible transformation is. So that's a big deal. I go immediately from the gym into meditation. Meditating, I think, is critical because anxiety, stress, like, all of that builds up silently in the background. And if you don't take time to erase it, it just gets worse and worse and worse and higher and higher and higher. And we're seeing levels of anxiety and depression, like, reaching literal what I'll call plague levels. I mean, it's crazy town. So I make sure that I meditate, which is really me learning to, through conscious action, move from the sympathetic nervous system, which is fight or flight, to the parasympathetic nervous system, which is known as rest and digest, which I think is very important. And then that gets me in a calm, creative state. I move from meditation, which I do for about 20 minutes. I move into what I call thinkitating, which is, if in meditation, trying to quiet your mind, in thinkitating, I'm trying to let my mind wander while I'm in this calm, creative state, also known as an alpha wave brain state. When I'm in that state, which is a very creative state to be in, I'll just let my mind wander about whatever problem I'm facing in business. And I try to decide what that's going to be before I even start meditating, so that once I get in that place, I don't lose my buzz, if you will, while, like, trying to rack my brain to think about what I should be thinking about. So I just let my mind wander across a big problem. Sometimes it's incredibly fruitful and sometimes it's a total bust, but fine, so be it. And then once I'm done with that, then I, depending on what time I woke up, I'll read, and I'll read anywhere from like an hour to an hour and a half, which is just my fantasy. I love reading so much. Always a book that I think is going to move me forward. So it's all nonfiction. Then once I'm done reading, I go on to never later than 8 a.m., sometimes as early as like 6 a.m. I'll go to my most important things list, which is the most important things I could be doing to move the business forward. And I just go through that list, make sure that I'm actually moving them forward, so it's all action-based. And then usually around anywhere between 8:30 and 10 o'clock, the first employee shows up. But by then, like depending on what time I woke up, I put anywhere from like 6 to 8 hours worth of work before the first person shows up. So, and that to me is how you really optimize. Because once people get here, inevitably there's going to be questions, distractions. You know, you're going to have to get things going. You're going to have meetings, phone calls. So if you don't prioritize all that just really critical optimization stuff in the morning, chances are you're never going to get to it.
How do you find that balance? I know you're a super like hardworking guy. You put in a lot of hours every day. You just mentioned, you know, your morning routine, and then there's work even after that. How do you balance that like home life, you know, with your relationship with your wife, with your family, and the work life? Like a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with that because it's so much work all the time, and they don't have that balance where they can, you know, take a break from it.
There's really two things going on there. So one, they probably don't like what they do enough. So I love what I do. So it's actually really rare that I feel the burn of like, oh, I'm working too much. And then two, I have a lot of credibility with myself. So I've worked my ass off so much. I've put in so many hours, really made progress, like actually held myself accountable to goals and all of that, that when I'm like, I fucking want to play video games right now, then I'll play video games. Like I will stare at a wall if I want to, because I have that credibility with myself. And I think a big problem is like people don't, they know that they're a little bit lazy. They know that they haven't worked as hard as they should have. And so because they're not efficient with their time, they actually feel guilty for taking time off. So I don't feel guilty at all for taking time off. I love what I do so much. My wife and I are building it together. So there's not even that conflict. I don't have kids, so there's nothing pulling me away from the business. There's nothing that, you know, makes me feel guilty for working a lot. So it's just I have a ton of clarity what I'm trying to accomplish. I love what I'm doing. So even the actions that I have to, not all of them, some of them is like contracts and shit like that. And I am really like, I find that torturous. But for the most part, like most of my days are, I'll call it at least 60% just like pleasurable. I really enjoy doing it. And I really believe that I'm helping people by doing it. So that's a big deal. So you put all that together and I just, it's, God, to really use an overused phrase, my life is very integrated. So I'm not pulled in opposite directions, and I'm not afraid to take time off when I want it.
Just kind of wrapping things up, is there a send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave our Elite Man audience, Tom, and then a place that our listeners can check out more about the work you're doing?
Definitely. So you are capable of anything you set your mind to. Humans are adaptation machines. What has allowed us to become the apex predator is our ability to adapt and learn. So it doesn't matter who you are today. It only matters who you want to become and the price you're willing to pay to get there, because change isn't always easy. I mean, it literally, the way the brain and the body respond, it needs to be a stressor. It needs to be something that's hard and difficult. But if you're willing to put yourself in that position all the time and learn and not focus on being cool or being smart or having the answer, but rather being prepared to get the answer, it is insane what you can accomplish given enough time. If you guys want to follow me socially, hit me up at Tom Bilyeu across all platforms. My name is spelled a little bit funny. It's B as in Bravo, I-L-Y-E-U. I'm very active socially. So any questions you want to ask or anything like that, hit me up. YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, I'm on all of them.
Tom, thanks so much for coming on the show again, man. I really do appreciate it, and I know our guys are going to love this one. So take care, and I'll talk to you soon, man.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, man.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.